On today's episode of The Good Word, we're going to talk about Skinny Bowl 1. It was a dud, but what does that tell us about the future? We're also going to talk about a little fight night, and we're going to hear some sound from the NBA's head of officiating, Monty McCutcheon, about the technical fouls and some of the respect for the game technical fouls. All that and a little bit more on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie Network, and you can also see us on YouTube. Since this is Wednesday, this is a solo show. It is just me and producer John, who is back on the mend. John, how you doing, man?
I'm at about 50%, which is good enough for me to be here, but not good enough for me to feel good about it.
Which is better than what it was on Monday. You know what I mean? Like, so 100%. This is an improvement. We're going up. We're going. It can only get better from here, which is why I will start with Skinny Bowl. It will only get better from here for Victor Wembanyama and Chet Holmgren. Like, you gotta think, y'all, that was a TNT game, in-season tournament game. They had that ugly monstrosity of a floor in Oklahoma City. They had these t-shirts. Yeah, I think Oklahoma City relatively is still a new-ish franchise. Like, they've only been around in Oklahoma City, I want to say, since 2008. Like, since they left Seattle. Like, so this is still a new-ish franchise. And even though they've endured a lot of the quote-unquote tanking and everything else, which has accumulated a massive draft picks for Sam Presti, who's been their only president of basketball operations since their iteration, they're now headed back towards the top of the trajectory in the Western Conference. I picked them to be in the top six of the West. It's looking kind of good right now, y'all. It really is. It's looking kind of good. That prediction is looking like it's going to hold. But last night was all about Skinny Bowl. It was all about Big Vic and Big Chet. And everybody had their mouth watered for that. I did. TNT did. The NBA did. And it looked a lot like Carmelo Anthony and LeBron James' first game against each other. And it was no bearing on how well they were going to play against each other and how well they were going to play in the NBA from that first matchup. So everybody who's looking to call Big Vic and Chet, you know, the capital B bust, there was some idiot on Twitter, you know, talking about his true shooting percentage and everything else. Yo, y'all, this ain't the time to talk about that. It's time to embrace the fun. It's time to look at these two guys as something we have never, ever seen. And it was something even that Greg Popovich said last night before the game that I thought was really, really surprising. He says, you know, this is just an observation for us. We're literally doing everything we can to give him a blank canvas, to let him figure some stuff out, so then we can learn him. Normally, you see teams walking into these situations and they got everything mapped out for the player. Rookie, number one pick, whatever it is. Okay, in the first 2 months, we're going to treat him like this. And then after the All-Star break, we're going to let him have a little bit more. The Spurs aren't actually doing that. And Greg Popovich might be actually the best coach in the history of basketball, right? Phil Jackson, all these other guys. Pop might be at the top of that hill. And yeah, you could say he got lucky and lucked into Big Vic. All right, cool. But I'm really intrigued by how he is handling him. And I'm also subsequently intrigued by the way that Oklahoma City is handling Chet. They're not speeding up. Neither side is speeding up the process when their respective player is showing you what they can do, right? Normally, you will see it. If player X shows that he can handle the ball, all of a sudden, boom, we're going to throw him a bunch of ISOs. We're going to put him in pick and roll now. We're going to accelerate that growth. It looks like both of these teams are taking a very deliberate and we're not rushing it approach. And I think that's really prudent. And I think that's actually kind of surprising when you consider how fast the NBA changes, how fast the NBA grows and it moves. It moves faster than ever, quicker than ever. I say it all the time and I'm going to continue to say it. But when I look at Chet and he's playing with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who was an all-first teamer last year, he's playing with Josh Giddey, who spent a lot of time on the ball the last couple of years. He's playing with Jalen Williams, who took a lot of opportunity last year and turned himself and worked himself into a heck of a revelation. So you know what they're doing with Chet? They're not turning Chet and saying, okay, Chet, we're just going to turn you loose. They're saying, Chet, you're going to spread the floor and you're going to be able to set the table for everybody else without even touching the ball. And then he's going to get the ball in morsels, the pull-up jumpers, the fast break dunks. Like, he scores without really trying. Like, imagine what the day that's going to happen sometime and maybe in the near future where they actually start some running some plays for him. Like, I found that ultra, ultra fascinating because my tendency is to say, oh, he scored 25? Oh, give him the kitchen sink. Like, it was my tendency with Victor Wembanyama after that first game against the Phoenix Suns, the back-to-back that they had. And we're going to get to these NBA back-to-backs, these, you know, teams staying in one city and then playing the same team twice over the course of 3 or 4 days. You get some familiarity, you might get a headlock. We'll get to that later, though. I promise. We'll get to that later. We're going to get to fight night. I promise you. But watching a guy like Victor and watching his acceleration of growth from, okay, this is how Phoenix is playing me, this is how I can adjust in night two. And they took two games from a team that people believe will be in the upper echelon of the Western Conference once they get fully healthy. Of course, no Bradley Beal. Devin Booker was only in one of those games. And it still didn't matter. The Spurs took two of them, and the Spurs are at the bottom of the Western Conference still. Like, they're not going to be a playoff team. They're going to be a competent team. They're going to be a team that you cannot just summarily dismiss. And even though last night they got blown out so bad that TNT shifted to Philadelphia and Indy, which was much to the chagrin of my friend Jared Greenberg, because he wanted all the camera time to, you know, display his new haircut and his makeup. Sorry, Jared. But that blowout was that bad. But you got to think also, no Keldon Johnson for the Spurs and no Devin Vassell. So you're missing 40 points on top of being a team that's still trying to figure some things out. And I was the one of the people who was looking at the Spurs. And I was saying, when David Robinson got there, and I think it was 89, they had like a 26 or 27 win improvement. I think it was actually 29. And then when Tim Duncan got there in 97, 98, when David Robinson was hurt for that year before, and they lucked out twice, similar sort of growth, another 26, 27 wins, and the Spurs were right back to prominence, right back in the thick of things, even before they won a championship. I was thinking, hey, maybe this is going to be a similar sort of growth. That's not really going to be the case, at least this year. This year, it's they're going to get back in the draft. You're going to, you know, figure out if the Jeremy Sohans and some of these other guys that are just getting growth and experience, and now we're seeing them for the first time. We're starting to pay attention to the Spurs for the first time because we're paying attention to Big Vic, and they're saying they're on this, I'm going to get my shots up. You guys are going to see me and hear me and notice me thing, which is, I guess would be human nature. The Spurs are going to figure out what pieces fit around Victor Wembanyama while figuring out Victor Wembanyama. That's the foundation. Let's get to the fun. Let me bring in producer John, because I feel like conflict is going to be a theme for today's show. John, did you know that Big Vic and Big Chet do not like each other?
I did know that. I've heard that before.
They don't like each other at all. Apparently, it goes back to the U19 games in 2021. You know, France, USA basketball, a really close game. And that summer, I can't remember where it was. Latvia. That's what it was. It was in Latvia. And I think the U.S. won 85, maybe 83. Don't quote me on that, but I feel like that was the final score. When you get both players in the pregame and even in the postgame, to talk about the other, you know what they say, John? Nothing. They say nothing about the other. You know how sometimes you'll hear the platitudes being thrown from one side to the other? Oh, yeah, he's a great player. You know, I look forward to playing against him. But it's my team against, it's our team against that team. It's not me versus me. That sort of thing, right?
They can't even stand to do that. They can't even stand to be nice.
They can't even stand to be nice to each other. And I love it, right? Because the only person, John, that can stand in front of them and look them dead in the eye is a man who was choked down to becoming 6'5" yesterday, Rudy Gobert. They probably can't stand to look at each other dead in the face, right? I get it. I totally get it. Like, the NBA does everything it can to eliminate the possibility of rivalries, even though, you know, it's kind of one of those things that the league is built on. But we've got something in front of our faces. We got two skinny dudes. And to be clear, Chet is a million times skinnier than Big Vic. Like, you can see the pointiness of Chet's shoulders. And I was watching both guys warm up. I was doing NBA TV an hour before the game. So I'm just sitting in my chair, and I turn around, and directly in one line of sight is Victor, and another line of sight is Chet. And for as undeveloped as you think Vic is, like, you can still see, of course, there's going to be some, he's going to grow into his body. He's 7'4", right? All this other stuff. But there's some muscle definition there. There's something there, right? There's some level of growth. You look over and you see Chet. Baby, let me tell you, Big Vic is markedly bigger than Chet at this stage. When you put two skinny people together and one skinny person looks far more muscular, that means that other skinny person is skinny and that other dude is slim, which is why I call Big Vic Big Slim. That's going to be his official nickname here on The Good Word with Goodwill. It is not going to be Wimby, right? I don't know where we get Wimby from. It sounds too much like Gumby and everything else, but we're going to call him Big Slim over here, okay? But you know what really impresses me about Chet, though, John?
What's that?
Is he is very, very comfortable in his own skin. He may not throw Vic any platitudes. Like, they had their, you know, I don't say their tussle, but they had their back and forth in the preseason where Chet said that, hey, Vic put his head into my chest. That's why he got this and one on me, which was actually true. And that was a pretty entertaining preseason game. But when you hear stories about Chet, and you see him, 7'4" white kid, right? Pork chop sideburns. Until you've actually seen him play. Like, this is going back before he even got to, you know, Gonzaga. Before you actually see him play, you're wondering, okay, how's he going to fit in? How's he going to fit in, A, with all these brothers, right? And B, how's he going to fit in with all these big dudes, okay? Because they're going to try to throw him around. And whenever there's someone new that looks a little different, we're going to test them, right? We're going to test them. We're going to figure it out. And this is something I heard. Chet playing in one of those, you know, all-star games, one of those, you know, prep all-star games. And you're seeing, you know, Steven Jackson is over there, Allen Iverson, Darius Miles, all those guys, right? You know, a motley crew, right, of basketball culture, depending on how you look at it, right? Some of those guys, like, actually, Darius Miles and Q Reach have a pretty good podcast. I really actually like those guys, and Jack is Jack. And they didn't know who Chet Holmgren was, and they're wondering. And then in that game, in 30 minutes or whatever it was, they got to see it, right? So after they see it, they're hanging all over Chet. Hey, we got him. He's coming with us. Where you going to school? What you doing? You know, all this other stuff. And Chet, to his credit, never tried to meet people where they are. He seems to be so comfortable in his own skin that you're going to meet him where he is once you see him play. When you see the skill set, when you see the athleticism, the length, the block shots, you know, being able to finish, the passing, all this other stuff, you'll believe. you'll believe. Like someone, this is the greatest compliment that I can say that I've been told. And this was when Chet was coming out of the draft. And this was from a couple of teams that told me that he was going to go number one if they had the number one pick. And he wound up, of course, not going number one. And they said, A, we're taking him number one. But they also said, B, take color away and you'll see Kevin Garnett. Like, it all makes sense. Like, the Kevin Garnett comp, if you remember Kevin Garnett in Minnesota when he first got in the league, when he was playing 3-4 positions, when the league wasn't quote-unquote positionless, and he was able to defend at a bunch of different levels. He could defend at the rim. He could defend in space, but he was still growing into his body, growing into his skill set. Of course, he was barking and playing with a lot of fire, and that's not necessarily Chet, but just if you see him that way, Chet Holmgren makes sense. So, okay, makes perfect sense. With Big Slim, that's a little different. I don't think that's Kevin Garnett. I've heard Kevin Garnett. I don't know if I necessarily see it. I just see him playing a completely different game. And I really, really like it. And I wouldn't say I'm even curious. Like, whenever the next Skinny Bowl is, like, we're going to have Skinny Bowls for the next, 10 or 15 years. And add to the fact that unlike LeBron and Carmelo, these two dudes ain't going to be trying to team up. They not going to be throwing flowers each other's way. Mind you, they're playing for almost mirror organizations in terms of the Spurs and the Thunder. Sam Presti, the only organization that Sam Presti has worked for besides the Oklahoma City Thunder, is the San Antonio Spurs. So you're going to see a lot of similarities in how the franchises are built, even though the way that they are handling the players are a little bit differently because simply Oklahoma City has Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the San Antonio Spurs do not. But enough of that, because I know what y'all really came for. So we're not in Buffalo, but y'all know that was Ric Flair and the Mean Gene Okerlund back in the day, because yesterday we had fight night, or in the other words of Draymond Green or Day Day from next Friday, we got action. Y'all saw it. Klay Thompson and Jaden McDaniels got into a little, grabbing each other's jersey. They gonna tussle around, throw each other around midcourt. And somehow Rudy Gobert found himself behind Klay Thompson and had him supposedly, allegedly, in a headlock. Didn't look like a headlock from here. Didn't look like much of a headlock. Draymond Green has wanted a piece of Rudy Gobert for a long time. There is a rivalry there that stems from winning Defensive Players of the Year, from Rudy Gobert, crying about not making the All-Star team, to Draymond Green making fun of him, to their trading barbs back and forth, insecurity is loud, and all this other type of stuff. Draymond Green had been waiting. He had his mouth watered for some hash, and he got his hash, okay? He ran up behind Rudy Gobert, and the next thing you knew, 7'4", turned to 4'7". I've never seen Rudy Gobert look so lifeless. And luckily for him, he wasn't trying to actually fight back, because that actually could have, done some harm, right? Like if he was straining his muscles or whatever, like, and something went wrong, luckily he just kind of went with the momentum for whatever reason. And John, I'm trying to figure out, have you picked up on this? Have you picked up, John, that people don't like Rudy Gobert?
I have picked up on that. No one seems to like Rudy Gobert.
Do you know why?
I don't. I think it's a French thing, but I don't know why.
So we as Americans, out of all the international players that are in the NBA, we don't like the French?
I don't know. He's French and he's a big guy. I don't know. He also just cries a lot, right?
You say we don't like criers. You say we're not sensitive Americans. Is that what
no,
you're
no,
saying,
no,
John?
Not actually crying, complaining, whining. I think he's got that reputation.
Yes, he does. I mean, there's other Frenchmen in the league. People love Boris Diaw, right? People love Nico Batum. People love Tony Parker, maybe with the exception of a teammate or two.
That's true.
Go look it up. Yeah. There's a few people that may not, right? If you know, once again, if you know, you know. One of these days, y'all will figure out that all of my shows will have some cliff notes, okay? And you will pick up on the cliff notes. I promise you, it'll be loads of fun either way. But people do not like Rudy Gobert. And Draymond Green might be number one on that list. He had the opportunity to put Rudy Gobert in the $1 million dream. And damn it, that's what he did. He dragged Rudy Gobert from the three-point line to the free throw line and had him for 10 seconds. Luckily for Draymond, Steve Kerr was like, let him go. Let him go. It was like literally Steve Kerr saw life flash before his eyes. And Draymond was not going to let him go. You know, John, who did not cover himself in glory?
Carl Anthony Towns?
He did not. He did not. It was almost like a, come on, man, let him go. What are you doing, man? Let him go. Stop playing, Draymond. That ain't the dude I want if I'm in a headlock, right? That ain't the dude I want in a headlock. But at the same time, Carl Anthony Towns was a dude who was tapping out when Ben Simmons, of all people, had him in a headlock during that kerfluffle in Philadelphia a few years ago. You remember that?
I remember the screenshot of him lying on the ground looking like he just wanted it to be over. Someone please come help me.
It was like he was in the Kurt ankle lock. It was just tap it out. But that's the... And you know who else quietly was not covering himself in glory, as a friend of mine texted me late last night? You know who didn't cover himself in glory?
I think I know. Is this your favorite? Is it Chris Paul?
No. Oh. So, shockingly,
Chris Paul bailed really quick. He looked at it and he was like, that's between y'all. And he bounced.
Well, here's the thing. Chris Paul did not want to be Jeff Van Gundy'd, okay? Remember Jeff Van Gundy? Hanging on to Alonzo Mourning's ankles.
Yep.
Chris Paul didn't want them problems, right? We saw the last time Chris Paul got into a real altercation. I think that was when he was in Houston, and it was against the Lakers, and he stuck his hand in Rajon Rondo's face, and next thing you know, Rondo spit at him. That's what it was. Rondo actually spit at him, and CP put his hands in his face. I forgot which thing happened first, and next thing you know, bop, bop. Quick two-piece. And you know who else came? Looking like Street Fighter. I can't pronounce his character's name. From Dhalsim. That's what it was. Dhalsim. That's how you pronounce his name. Looking like Dhalsim from Street Fighter. You know who else came?
Who?
That night, John?
The police?
You don't remember? Brandon Ingram.
I don't remember that.
Brandon Ingram, who was still a Laker at the time, because LeBron hadn't shipped him off yet. Brandon Ingram came and had super long arms. So he was throwing at Chris Paul. It was almost like the Dr. J. Larry Bird one where Charles Barkley had Bird wrapped up and Doc was just pop, 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 because Larry Bird told Dr. J 42-6, which was, you know, the point differential between Larry Bird at the time and Dr. J, 42-6. Like, we couldn't even get to more than 2 points happening in Golden State in Minnesota. Like, neither team could actually get a point on the board. Like, that shows you how much Draymond Green wanted Rudy Gobert. I've been around, John, just in life. I've been around dudes that have just been waiting. When I say waiting, they've been waiting for that, waiting for the dude to act up. Just, I'm waiting, y'all. I promise you, I'm waiting. Didn't happen, right? So that's that. But it's funny considering we have the Monty McCutchen sound, because I talked to Monty McCutchen on Monday and I was talking about the league being a little bit on the soft side and everything being a preventative measure because the league don't want fights and everything else. And I talked to him Monday, wrote the story yesterday. And of course, the league had the players had to go and do this and just basically wipe their behinds all over my sentiment. But this is Monty talking about some of the deterrents that the league is trying to put in place or why they're calling quick technical fouls and some of the respect for the game taunting fouls.
Yeah, I think to some degree, when you start talking about taunting, there's a fine balance. And I think you're fair to hold us accountable to what you believe that is. I do think that in a world in which we did not take care of any taunting, we would see a a huge increase in a physical response to that taunting. And I think to some degree, we're always trying to find the right balance of what is and isn't warranting a taunting. And a negative is hard to prove, Vinny. And all I mean by that is this. If we sit here and say, oh, a certain thing was given, and then as a result, nothing that we thought would have happened happened. A fight didn't happen because we did this, right? That's hard to prove because there's no way to know whether a fight would have happened or not. What we do know historically is that taunting gone unchecked leads to altercations. It leads to an increase in physicality. It leads to more, to put it kindly, passionate play that leads to physicality. And finding the right balance of what is and isn't a good technical foul on taunting is something that we'll continue to calibrate with the competition committee.
Well, here's what I will say to that. This was in the first minute of the game. You didn't even have time to call these technical fouls. But you know what happened? You know what it was? Not only was it Draymond Green and Rudy Gobert who don't like each other, it was also two teams who played each other the other night, Sunday night. And Anthony Edwards and Draymond Green had gotten into a little barking, and this familiarity of teams trying to close down travel a little bit and making teams stay in another city for a couple extra nights. We're just going to get these two home games out of the way. We're going to get this matchup out of the way. You're going to have a little more contempt. It's going to look a little bit more like a playoff series. And I like it. I don't like guys getting booted out of games and everything else, but I don't mind the contentiousness. You can't ask players to care and then take away that passion. But does Draymond Green have to control himself? Absolutely. Will Draymond Green control himself? Absolutely not. I would expect, I would say, a 3-5 game suspension given his previous history, which was taken into account when he missed game 3 because he, you know, did the A-Town stomp on Domantas Sabonis in front of every, you know, in front of the entire Sacramento in the Bay Area. So I would expect NBA EVP Joe Dumars, who's also a mentor of Draymond Green's, to actually have to come down on him like he did in the playoffs. 3-5 games. I'm not saying 10 or 15. I think people are being a little outrageous given that Draymond wasn't actually an instigator to begin with it. He just happened to run in because he saw an opportunity and he was going to take it. That's what that was. So it's one of those interesting things. And the league, of course, is a fine line that Monty McCutcheon talked about. And it's something that everybody's going to have to monitor, including me. But I'm a person. I am a child of the 80s and 90s. I don't mind the contentiousness. I know John doesn't either. And because y'all don't know this, but John is not George Clooney. John does not have hair, which means John is usually around my age. And we are used to growing up with a certain level of contentiousness in NBA basketball. But that is our show for today. John, sorry to throw you under the bus like that. That is our show for today. Thanks to producer John, who is also my co-host today. He's also working behind the glass and he's feeling better. Send him, of course, your best wishes and best thoughts. Jake and Dan will be back for a new episode of No Cap Room tomorrow. I will be back with a new episode of The Good Word on Monday. Don't forget to check out all of our podcasts on the Ball Don't Lie Network. Rate us, review us, and give us all those 5 stars. Really appreciate you. Until then, everybody, be safe.